Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday night, and you know what that means. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the four-time, and I'll say it again, the four-time award-winning, politically direct, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe. Hope you all having a wonderful week, and thank you for joining us here on the 30th of September. Yes, wrapping up the month. And certainly I'm very thankful for all of you listening from wherever and however you may be doing so via www.insidernj.com/podcast. Again, folks, October is again tomorrow. I'm very excited. It's my favorite month of the year. Halloween is my favorite holiday, so I'm looking forward to that. My Dallas Cowboys are in first place in the NFC East. Nice to see that as well. Let's build on this 2-1 record this weekend. Of course, folks, politics never takes a break here on the podcast. And certainly I appreciate everyone tuning out, you know, really throughout the Garden State. And, of course, to all my friends throughout the good old U.S. of A. Again, thanks for tuning in here this evening. Got a great guest coming up in just a moment. Just want to stick around for that. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, write to me. I love to hear from you. politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. That is our inbox. I love getting emails about what you enjoy about the show, what don't you enjoy about the show, what guests you have not heard from on the program, what you like, who you would like me to schedule. That'd be amazing to hear from you all. So again, write to the inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow yours truly on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. That's Uribe. And, of course, hit me up on my own Instagram, of course, you know, there. And also on Twitter at NoFilterUribe, at NoFilterUribe. Of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, please check out Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe on Facebook. Like it and tell your friends to do the same. Now, folks, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point. I'll be taking some calls later in the show. Love to hear from you. So call in toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, our toll free number, 818-572-8032. Our toll free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't read Insider NJ, I don't know what you're waiting for, but it is the leader in political news here in the Garden State. You can check out www.insidernj.com. Outstanding columns, the latest scoops, and really nobody covers politics, folks, in New Jersey like Insider NJ. Once you click on the website there, you'll see the subscribe button on the upper right-hand corner. Double-click on that, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. Now, while you're, let's say, making lunch for your kids in the morning, maybe you get a quick workout in, maybe walking the dog, whatever it is you're doing, folks. I'm sure you're either on your smartphone or your laptop or tablet is nearby. You're scrolling through your inbox. And guess what? Once you do that, the morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. And again, it contains all the latest the scoops of what's going on right now, especially during election season. And also, obviously, the latest columns from our outstanding staff at Insider NJ. And let me just say this because I really want to make it clear because I know I say it every week, but I cannot emphasize this enough, folks. You know, I can't express my gratitude to the Graham family enough. Obviously, Michael Graham, Ryan Graham, collectively, for their belief in the show. When this podcast first started in January of 2018, I didn't know what to make of it, really, to be honest with you. I already was hosting a successful Hudson County-centric podcast on Wednesday nights on Blog Talk Radio. And obviously, I wanted to, you know, venture into something bigger. You know me. I'm an ambitious son of a gun. And I said, hey, listen, if I can, you know, partner with Insider NJ, I think it would benefit not just myself, but obviously it would benefit them because of what I can bring on the airwaves. And I can't thank them enough, really. You know, Michael, you know, Mike Graham and Ryan Graham, again, are just so supportive. My insider boss, my general manager, Pino Nelli, I know he doesn't always like me dropping his name on the air, but he's extremely supportive also. And, you know, as a guy who's played organized sports in his life, I mean, I understand the importance of teamwork. You're playing collectively towards a common goal, and that's to be the best, and I believe that's what Insider NJ is. You don't always like your teammates, and in my case, that's the unequivocal truth, folks. I mean, you know, I respect them as journalists, obviously. Our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, you know, Maxie and I don't like each other very much at all. We have very different politics, and that's, you know, it's a shame that, you know, it's gotten that tribal, right, in today's political climate. But I can't take away the fact that he's an exceptional journalist. He's a very good writer. Not a good interviewer if you ever watch his videos. Not as good as me, I believe. But, again, maybe I'm just being biased. But he's a hell of a journalist. You definitely want to catch his columns when you can on Insider NJ. Same thing with Jay Lasseter. You know, little JJ, another guy. We don't like each other at all. I'm not shy about saying it. I know he isn't either when asked or prompted. But he's a hell of a journalist as well. Great sources, just an excellent writer. You definitely want to check out his columns if you can. Even Alan Steinberg, folks. And Alan Steinberg and I have a great relationship. Like, I consider Alan a friend. And Alan and I don't really agree on a lot of things at all. I mean, I know he's a Republican, and he says he's a Republican, but, you know, sometimes, you know, some of his leanings go very left, and that's okay. But we have very spirited conversations, and we're very civil with each other. And I think that's what you need to be. Especially in today's political climate. But he's a great columnist. His columns obviously prompt a lot of discussion, a lot of clicks and views online. So, you know, Alan's doing something right. And, of course, you know, Fred Snowflake. And let me just give a shout-out to Fred here because I've had Fred on this podcast multiple times. He'll be actually joining me next month, coming up, if I'm not mistaken, I believe on October the 14th. We'll be pre-recording that day, so that episode will be available again on InsiderNJ.com/podcast. And I'll tell you something. These last couple of weeks, I mean, Fred's a great writer. I mean, I read his columns whenever they're posted. But this past week, post-debate analysis, and I'll be talking about that shortly with my exceptional guest this week, coming up in a moment. But, you know, his breakdown of the debate on Tuesday night between Governor Phil Murphy and Jack Chiarelli, I think, was spot on. He's been really all over the state during this election season, not just, you know, covering the gubernatorial race, but I mean, he's been in different counties. He's been covering some legislative races. And to be honest with you, there's really no legislative race right now, folks, with less than 40 days to go, essentially, you know, that's really capturing anyone's attention. I think it's almost a foregone conclusion. I think, you know, any Republican challengers looking to unseat Democratic incumbents, I think looks a little unrealistic, but who knows? We'll see what turnout looks like coming up on Tuesday, November the 2nd. But he's been doing a good job there. So, again, folks, I can't say enough about the team I'm on with Insider NJ. We don't get along all the time. We don't like each other whatsoever. But we're doing our part in becoming, well, not becoming, arguably what I would argue is the best news site in the state of New Jersey. And, again, can't say enough about Insider NJ. Folks, make sure you like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Twitter as well. Folks, 909 here on the East Coast, again, as a reminder, 818-572-8032, our toll-free number tonight. I'll take some calls later in the show. If you wish to call in and chime in about what's going on in Jersey politics, who do you like in the governor's race, what do you think of the debate on Tuesday night, Certainly any legislative races that you find interesting, whatever's on your mind, folks, call in. Again, toll free, 818-572-8032. Our toll free number, once again, brought to you by Insider NJ. And ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the staff, or our sponsors. Folks, speaking of the gubernatorial race, this past Tuesday was a very interesting debate on ABC7. And, you know, it was pretty good questions all throughout. And, you know, it was something that got, you know, gets you thinking as Election Day is essentially really about 32 days away here in the state of New Jersey. And here tonight to help me break it down, folks, a guy who I have an enormous amount of respect for. And he's a reminder that, like, we can still be civil in this extreme time of tribalism, folks, that exists in our political climate, because you can't find a guy any more opposite than yours truly, but he's a great guy. He's the founder and the editor of New Brunswick Today, folks. The great Charlie Cradleville joins us tonight here on Politically Direct. What's going on, brother?
Good to be with you, Fernando. How have you been?
I've been good, man. You know, just getting back from summer break, just doing the podcast. I'm very excited that my Dallas Cowboys are in first place in the NFC East. So I'm a little giddy, Charlie. It's a little early, but yeah, I'm a little giddy. I'm a little giddy, brother. Do you like the NFL? Do you follow a team?
It's been a while. Once upon a time, I was an Eagles fan.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not the time to be an Eagles fan right now, man. You might want to take a break. You might want to stay on that hiatus there, brother. But how are you? How's family? How's everybody?
Everybody's good. Yeah, thank goodness. You know, life keeps throwing curveballs at me. My phone has been broken all week, but I'm talking to you tonight from my new landline here.
Okay. I mean, and it was interesting because when I texted you earlier, I saw like a green text. I'm like, does Charlie have a Samsung? Oh, heaven forbid. What's going on here? Oh, my goodness. I was like, wow. You know, almost like I was like, oh, my God. But Charlie, listen, bro, a lot to talk about this week. Let's start off with what I know was on my mind all week, and I talked about it on a couple of the shows. I'll be discussing it tomorrow night on my StreamYard show with former Assemblywoman Maria Rodriguez-Gregg. You know, Tuesday night was on ABC7, the debate between Governor Phil Murphy and Jack Chiarelli. It was pretty civilized, I thought. I didn't think it was going to turn into like a Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton type of, like, you know, all out battle royal, right? Like jabbing at each other per se. But I thought it was pretty interesting. I thought the questions were pretty fair. I kind of call it a draw. I think the governor got off some good points, but I think Jack Chiarelli got off some good points. So let's break it down here. What did you like? What didn't you like about Tuesday night?
Yeah, it was certainly a show. It was quite a performance from both candidates. I liked the fact that the moderators allowed them to have some back and forth and, you know, rebut each other's points. And certainly, you know, it helped that the audience was liquored up and, you know, hooting and hollering. But, you know, I did feel some of the questions were kind of off. I know, you know, one of the questions was directed to Murphy, but about something that the other candidate had said. And then I know that, you know, the marijuana question, the premise for that didn't make sense given what's already on the books. And then, you know, the question sort of that I think a lot of folks are going to remember for a long time, the sort of tax pledge ask of Murphy, I thought was interesting. It was definitely, you know, dramatic, but I don't know you know, how productive that was. I mean, I could certainly see a new tax coming, you know, despite the pledge. So, you know, all told, it was definitely something that kept people captivated and paying attention. I think it's going to raise awareness of the race, and you know, I guess it's still a contest. You know, there's still a chance that that an upset could occur.
You know, it's interesting looking at the latest poll, and I don't take polls very seriously lately, Charlie. I don't know about you, but I think we've learned that polling is not always an exact science.
Right. Right,
we've seen polls having the governor up as many as 20 points, and now this week I think it's down to 8. You know, I looked at this debate, and I've talked about it. I've made appearances on other shows in the last few weeks, and I, you know, for the sports fans listening tonight, I sort of used this analogy. You know, I give Jack a puncher's chance for any of us boxing fans that are devoted like me. You know, you sort of look at the fighter as, you know, hey, the incumbent's the champion, and you have to kind of come out there swinging. And I don't know if Jack did that. I mean, there were a couple good zings on behalf of Jack's part, but let's, again, being that you and I are, you know, I would argue very accredited journalists, I think we're both intellectually honest. I think the governor got in some jabs also. So it's kind of one of these things where, as you said before, there's a good back and forth. It wasn't like hostile. It wasn't getting like uncivilized. It wasn't getting like chippy or fickle. But I would argue that Jack had to kind of come out swinging, and I don't think he did. I mean, I would argue Jack had to come out swinging to the point of like winning this debate hands down, and I don't think he did that. Do you see it that same way?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were definitely some exchanges where Murphy bested him. You know, in particular, the police union exchange where, you know, looked like for a minute there Chiarelli had spun it as, you know, not so bad that he didn't have any endorsements from the cops. But then, you know, Murphy reset the balance and really kind of, you know, exposed that he doesn't really have any official police support. But, you know, I do think there were a lot of things that were not said, a lot of things that should have been challenged. You know, certainly, you know, having dealt with the governor, there were some things I wish that Chiarelli had gone after. You know, I think like the Katie Brennan question did not get anything more than a very surface level, you know, non-answer from Murphy.
Yeah.
And then,
that's right.
You know, mm-hmm. And then the, you know, like he touted things like body-worn cameras are now almost universally adopted up and down the state. Well, I wish somebody had pointed out New Brunswick police have not one body camera deployed as of this very moment. So, you know, there were some things that didn't get into all the depth, but, you know, there'll be another debate and hopefully, you know, some more, you know, reporters questioning some of these candidates and their statements.
No, I agree with you. I'm glad you brought up the Katie Brennan topic because I know that, and for me, it, you know, it kind of resonates with me. I'm a Hudson County guy, you know. Katie's from Jersey City up here, and she's a name that still resonates for a lot of us. I mean, she's currently working now in the city of New York. I know when she was on NJTV recently with Uncle Dave, I mean, she was, I think, gave some noncommittal answers. I think obviously she wasn't going to endorse anybody. She wasn't going to trash the governor either. I mean, again, she's still someone that I believe still wants to be relevant in Democratic politics. That's what the area is dominated by. We'll see after 8 years of a disaster of Bill de Blasio across the river from me as I look at it every day. In New York, we'll see what happens there. We'll see if she decides to stay in New York politics or come back to Jersey. That could be, you know, we'll see what happens on November 2nd here. But I think Jack missed a great opportunity. I think Jack could have just come on and said, hey, listen, my campaign dropped the ball with this. We should not have invoked her name without talking
right.
to her. I think, you know, he should have done that. But by the same token, too, you know, it doesn't negate the fact that if we all remember, and I think I said this on other shows, though, Charlie, that, you know, in January of 2018, or actually 2019, when we started seeing those hearings in Trenton, yeah, you know, the governor was very emphatic and defiant about, well, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's see what happened. Like, where is Al Alvarez? Is he somewhere in some stationery closet, in HR somewhere? Is he sharpening pencils? What's he doing? You know, we never really got the answers to that. Meanwhile, Katie Brennan had to sit there in front of a legislative hearing. And, you know, I think that was a good moment for Jack to maybe go after Murphy on the fact that this wasn't really addressed. The same thing with the Edna Mahan women's prison, Charlie. I mean, my goodness. I mean, I get it that there was a federal report about it, but, you know, how long did it take the governor and his staff to address this? And
I just think
it's these little things that I'm not saying Murphy's ultra anti-women, but it doesn't paint Murphy in a very good light in terms of how to deal with women right now in New Jersey. I think Jack dropped the ball there and really having a sort of a softball right down the middle of the plate to swing at.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really more broadly a failure to deal with difficult issues, right? You know, the easy ones, sure, Murphy is you know, making good choices on most of those decisions. But, you know, when you have a situation like, you know, what's going on in the prison, or, you know, Katie Brennan raising, you know, very serious allegations about, you know, the guy that, you know, Governor Murphy put into a very highly paid, powerful position, supposed to build schools for poor areas. You know, this was, you know, these were colossal failures that really, I think, deserved some more exploration. Certainly, Jack Cittarelli was the only person who mentioned the Edna Mann scandal, I believe. It was not the topic of a question. It was just tangentially mentioned. And, yeah, Murphy's response was just, to all of it, was just, why don't you ask Sheila Oliver? And, you know, bringing up Cittarelli's votes to defund Planned Parenthood, not exactly addressing the merits of the, you know, these very serious matters.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. You brought up Planned Parenthood, Charlie. And I want to pick your brain about this, because I talked about this today. Actually, today I was in the studio filming my Hudson County studio show, and I talked about it during my opening monologue about Planned Parenthood being invoked, during the conversation, and about Phil Murphy's record and how he's never, you know, defunded Planned Parenthood while he's been governor during his budgets, you know, invoking the name of Chris Christie, which, you know, I hate that. Mm-hmm. It's like, forget about what Christie did. Let's worry about what you did in your 4 years. And, you know, Charlie, again, maybe this is the conservative in me, and maybe we'll butt heads a little bit here on this, but I just think that this hysteria about reproductive rights being under attack in New Jersey, I think, bro, it's political theater, because we're not in Texas. We're not in Florida, okay? And whatever's going on in Texas, that's their business. You know, as I tell people on my show, you know, if we all took high school history, hopefully we passed it, and whenever that curriculum was on the Constitution, we started reading about federalism and states' rights, listen, I'm not saying it's the best policy. I'm not here to stand up for this policy. But that's Texas. That's states' rights. Let them govern the way that, you know, nobody in Texas, Charlie, is going on social media saying, oh my God, you see how poorly run New Jersey is? Look how high their property taxes are. Look how poorly run that state is. They don't care. We shouldn't care any more than they should care about what we're doing. So the idea that, first of all, New Jersey is as blue a state as it gets, whether it's across the river in New York, or even, I mean, out in that cesspool in California, we all know how bad it is over there. New Jersey's as blue as it gets. It's a solid Democratic majority in the legislature, Charlie. You know, and the idea, well, you know, during Chris Christie, you know, Planned Parenthood was defunded. Charlie, not one Planned Parenthood clinic closed. I looked this up. Not one closed in 8 years. So guess what? They found a way to be self-reliant, just like other charities do, right? The American Cancer Society, which I'm a big volunteer for, right? We're still on each other's news feed, so you see what I'm doing for ACS. They're still very, very successful all these years, either getting grants. But Planned Parenthood gets millions of dollars, Charlie, okay? Millions of dollars yearly subsidized by taxpayers. And they're not always going to fund these clinics. I mean, they're funding political campaigns, et cetera, et cetera. So I just think that this hysteria by groups that, like Women for Progress, that's another insufferable activist group, or these other groups in New Jersey, I think it's a little overblown in New Jersey about reproductive rights. I'm not saying we're never going to be Texas, bro, but the idea that, oh my God, you know, oh, my uterus is under attack. Let's calm down, man. That's how I see it, Charlie. I'm very curious about you, bro.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, you know, I think for many people, especially women, you know, this is a fundamental issue for them. It's something that, you know, it's not something that you know they can look away from or not make top of mind, and mm-hmm. and you know I gotta be honest, I respect that. You know, it's like you only get one body and it's your body, and you want to do everything you can to protect it. So I understand it'd be alarming if you hear about another state in your country you know making moves to try to limit your control over your body. So I get it. That said, I don't think it's an appropriate answer to, you know, allegations that your campaign was toxic to women to say, well, you defunded Planned Parenthood. You know, that's not, I don't think that's an appropriate retort to that, like the governor wishes it was. But yeah, I do, you know, I do think that, you know, he knows how to push people's buttons and say the words that are going to activate his base. And certainly, you know, especially at this moment, you know, the right to an abortion is a top of mind issue for many, many voters. So he's trying to appeal to them and get their support. And, you know, I just wish that there was some follow up on those real issues like the Katie Brennan situation, which, you know, was a taxpayers paid $1 million to settle that matter. And, you know, Ed the Man is still a very active situation. You know, there's plans to close it, but, you know, a sort of unclear vision for what's next.
No, Charlie, all great points. And, folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:25 here on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. Joining me here this evening is the founder and editor of New Brunswick Today, the great Charlie Cradoville, here tonight on Politically Direct. Charlie, great points there. And, again, getting back to that reference about Planned Parenthood during the debate, I mean, again, it's just like, let's stop the manufactured outrage. You know, again, no one's saying that these clinics aren't helpful. They're very helpful to women. Hey, listen, let's be honest. As guys, we all know how they can be beneficial to men too. I get it. So I'm not tone deaf on this. But the idea that, you know, not one clinic closed during the 8 years of Chris Christie. I'm not defending Chris Christie. I have a lot of qualms with him. I have a lot of policy prescriptions that I disagree on. You know, I'm not here to defend him, but it's just, again, this manufactured outrage. Like, not one clinic closed during his 8 years. Even, you know, during the 4 years of Donald Trump's presidency, when there was this outcry to defund folks, Planned Parenthood does very well by themselves with private sector donations. They have a lot of wealthy donors that help Planned Parenthood. So let's stop. Let's stop this facade that, you know, here we are, here's PP, you know, rubbing nickels together because they're trying to cry poverty. That's not the case. So, like, I kind of feel like these talking points, I get, you're right, they resonate with the base. They're not dog whistling, but they really energize the base in terms of bringing that up in conversation. But to your point about Katie Brennan, absolutely. It cost taxpayers money to settle that. I'm assuming that there was an NDA that was signed. Certainly we're seeing, you know, I'm sure other people were implicated as well. And you know, these hearings cost time and money that could have been better served by the legislature. And not to say that these hearings weren't important. Of course they were. They were important for Katie Brennan and to try to get to the bottom of what was, I guess, perceived as a toxic work environment for women. But at the same time, it's almost like, these are problems that are avoidable, Charlie, where I think if you just are smarter in who you hire or who you have working for you, you can avoid these sort of problems. But it's a reminder sometimes that government can be tone deaf on this, whether it's Republicans or Democrats in power.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, there's just so much more to get to. Like, when you think about, well, you know, Al Alvarez and what it means that he was brought in and put into that position despite the allegation against him, you know, that's a very serious role. He was chief of staff to the Schools Development Authority, the agency that's supposed to build schools for all of the poor cities in New Jersey, and they have gone broke. They're running out of money and won't build any more new schools. And, you know, the people that Murphy put in charge were not good. They, you know, the Lizette Delgado Polanco and Al Alvarez really, you know, were the nail in the coffin for that agency. They you know, it feels very much like the old days when the School Construction Corporation collapsed and had to be replaced with the SDA. And, you know, nobody's talking about that and the impact on the thousands of children who are going to school in inadequate facilities or overcrowded facilities. And, you know, these are the consequences of the personnel decisions of the incumbent governor. So hopefully, you know, we will get to some more of the sort of substance instead of just, you know, going back and forth with attacks.
Great point there. And, oh, my God, you know, Trenton misspending money? No way, Charlie. Unbelievable.
Right.
I'm telling you, brother, this is – folks, water, wet. I mean, that's pretty much what we've come to learn in Trenton. But getting back to the debate, though, a couple other topics. I know that they mentioned as well the idea about and you referenced it earlier, the governor emphatically being held, having his feet held to the fire about, hey, no new taxes. It almost reminds us, us history fans, folks, about, you know, in 1992 when then President George H.W. Bush, in a debate on stage with Bill Clinton, with Governor Bill Clinton at the time, said, read my lips, no new taxes. That he's never lived that down. You know, God rest his soul, George H.W. Bush. But that was something that was a highlight of the debate, and it came back to haunt him. Do you think it'll come back to haunt the governor here, Chuck?
Quite possibly, Ken, because when you look at, you know, the plans that may come from the legislature, which Murphy does not, you know, control every aspect of, and then you look at the problems that we're currently facing and, you know, the unknowns that, you know, come from being, we're right now in a double state of emergency, you know, still slammed from the storm, you know, many counties, federal disaster areas, and, you know, we don't know what the future holds when it comes to things like storms and pandemics and all that. So I think it's probably not, you know, the accurate or responsible answer to promise, nope, no new taxes. I believe the way Murphy put it was, we're done. You know, I don't think you can say that with any certitude, given what, you know, we've witnessed over the last 4 years. So, you know, it was kind of like a poor choice, in my view, for Murphy to say that, but maybe he's saying what he feels he needs to say to win. I think he certainly could come up to, you know, prove to be another one of his broken promises in the near future.
Oh, Charlie, I agree with you, brother. And again, you know, the idea of anyone in Trenton not loving a new tax. I mean, again, and I know this. I say this a lot on my social media, but I've never met a Democrat in Trenton that's never met a tax that they don't love, right? I mean, I kind of bring that up sometimes in shows. And I get that, listen, Republicans in Trenton, I think sometimes are guilty of poor fiscal mismanagement as well. So I have to be consistent. But it was interesting to see the governor not deflect about property taxes because, I mean, again, that's, you know, the journalist from ABC7, she brought up the fact that, you know, again, we lead the nation in the highest property taxes. Right now in New Jersey, we're talking about an average of $9,112, which is it's insane. I mean, there was a story put out by NJ.com, I think, over the summer. I mean, you know, I don't really trust NJ.com. I trust them as far as, you know, I trust the Giants on defense sometimes. But, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day too. And they actually put up, you know, a decent article there about, hey, this is a serious problem. And they give you a list of, like, the top 25 municipalities in the state. And Charlie, I don't know about you. I don't know if you saw that story this summer, but I saw some of these property taxes. I mean, I saw a town, I think it was Milburn in Union County. We're talking about 24,000 and change. We're seeing areas up by me in Bergen County, like 13, 14, 15,000. Charlie, this is out of control, bro.
Definitely, you know, property taxes are out of control. And you know, I certainly don't. There's
how
no easy
by,
solution, but nobody's
how
got
how
any,
is it by, how,
any.
How is it by you in New Brunswick and the nearby towns of Middlesex County? How bad a problem is it there?
Middlesex County is definitely up there. You know, urban areas are a little different. I know, you know, the Rutgers University presence here certainly has an influence on a lot of the city. And, you know, one thing that you know, I think not enough people talk about are the tax exemptions. So, you know, perhaps more than any other city, New Brunswick is tax exempt. About half the land here is exempt from taxes because it's either state university, you know, hospitals, other, you know, private entities that have gotten these long-term tax exemptions that, of course, steer the money away from the school systems and then, you know, further burden the folks that are paying the traditional property taxes. You know, we have a lot of property that's exempt here, and so I think that's, you know, sort of the elephant in the room when it comes to, you know, resolving that issue is that, you know, a lot of properties just don't generate any tax revenue at all because they've been exempted.
You know what? That's a great observation there. And it's interesting because I think this is what people forget, and especially in areas like Middlesex County, up here in Hudson, as well as Bergen. I mean, throughout the state, Charlie. I mean, it's a pervasive problem, and it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. And, you know, back to the point about the governor seeing practically no new taxes. Well, we all know that's not the case, right? We know that right now there's a moratorium on the gas tax, but that'll resume at some point. Again, you know, it's written into the law. I believe that, you know, next year, obviously, I mean, let's be fair. You know, there were some budgets I wasn't a fan of under Governor Christie. But, you know, Charlie, I talk about this all the time. I mean, this isn't Washington. It's not like it's a 50-50 Senate and, you know, and the House is only a 5-seat majority for Democrats. I mean, Democrats have a stranglehold on the legislature. Democrats can shove whatever they want down the throats of New Jerseyans legislation-wise, and the minority party is powerless. Let's be honest about it. I mean, again, you know, we talked about the thing on the last episode. I say this to all my colleagues in academia, and when they're like bitching and moaning to me, oh, well, New Jersey's expensive. And I'm like, well, guess what? It's not conservatives like me, Charlie, that have any say in the legislature. Anybody who's a conservative, or specifically a fiscal conservative, like State Senator Michael Testa and others, I hate to break it to people. They're not the ones with, you know, having clout in the legislature. Steve Sweeney, the State Senate President, Assembly Speaker Coughlin. I mean, Democrats have big margins. They're, you know, it's 25-50 in the State Senate, and it's 52-38 in the State Assembly. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, these are big majorities, and every year, whether it's a Republican or Democrat in the governor's seat, it's becoming almost abhorrent how the legislature just keeps having a higher and higher budget. I mean, come on, man. I mean, and when I say you, I don't mean this you, Charlie. I mean this generically. Folks out there, you know, you can't be telling me, oh, well, it's just the cost of living. It's just more expensive. Why is that? Why is no one talking about that, Charlie?
Well, I think that, you know, folks are, you know, as usual, distracted by some of the flashier issues and not, you know, paying attention to the bottom line. You know, obviously, you know, legislators know what they need to do to get reelected, and, you know, they generally are catering more to the needs of donors than voters, because most of the seats are safe seats where, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you've got a lot of wiggle room to, you know, make mistakes or do things that your constituents don't like and don't want you to do, but still win just based on, you know, the makeup of your district and the party line system, which I know we've talked about before. But all this stuff adds up to a system where, you know, they're, you know, inevitably a lot more focused on people who can give them money and big money. And that ends up being interests that are not aligned with the interests of their constituents. And so, yeah, not to mention they also, you know, Judiciary Committee also gets to pick the judges. So a lot of, you know, a lot of power is being wielded there. And, you know, I don't think that they are really all that focused or even in touch with their districts. In many cases, these are folks who, you know, are career politicians and not very deeply embedded in their community.
Oh, but listen, that's a fair point too. And let's switch from the governor's race for a minute. Let's switch gears here. I want to sort of pick your brain, Charlie, but, you know, election day is 32 days away, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tomorrow's October and, one of my favorite months of the year. I don't know about you, but I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. So
sure.
I just something about October. I love it. But, you know, election day is right upon us, and it just seems that, you know, I have a few friends that are running for state assembly seats, a couple of people I've interviewed for state Senate seats. I'll keep interviewing people in the next few weeks here leading up to election day. It just seems like, you know, Democrats are just, and regardless of what the census tells us, right, and sort of redistricting and whatever that's going to ensue soon, it just seems like, you know, Democrats are pretty safe to remain in their seats. I don't know. I mean, there might be a few Republicans I kind of rooting for because I know them personally, and maybe they can pull off an upset. But realistically, is there any seat right now that you are looking at, Charlie, that a Democrat's really vulnerable in?
I guess it's Dawn Adiego. You know, switched parties from Republican to Democrat, and she, you know, I think is probably the most vulnerable of the Democrat incumbents. But yeah, I mean, we would be, you know, lucky to see one upset in all of the you know, 120 seats that are up this go round. I don't know what, if you've got your eye on any races, but generally they are, you know, not the most prone to upsets.
No, I mean, listen, it's interesting because, for example, this past Monday, I just interviewed a state Senate candidate running down by you, running against, I believe, Chris Smith. I interviewed Richard Garcia this week, and, you know, he's an attorney, he's a businessman, but, I mean, he's realistic. He knows that down there, I believe it's District 17, which is down by you, I believe it encompasses New Brunswick.
I am a constituent, District 17.
Yeah. Yeah, again, so I don't know if you caught the interview on Monday night on my Real Talk show, but I had him on. As a matter of fact, I actually have an assembly candidate from 17 coming up on Monday, challenging one of the incumbent Democrats in 17 down by you. I mean, listen, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of enthusiasm. They're nice guys, you know. I mean, obviously I'm pulling for them. But it just seems, though, Charlie, you know, down where you reside up in New Brunswick and, you know, District 17, those municipalities in that district, and they're really blue areas, you know, Elizabeth, Union County, up here in Hudson, mm-hmm. parts of southern Bergen, Camden, Passaic. It's just like these are just like the stranglehold by Democrats in these districts is so overwhelming. It's like it's to the point of smothering
right.
you in your sleep with a pillow. You know, I hate to use that analogy. That's not a funny one, but it just seems like that's what it feels like, that overwhelming type of effect.
Yeah, no, certainly it's very tough to go up against these machines. Like I said, the party split alone is, you know, renders most of these elections a foregone conclusion, and really the more likely upset would be in the June primaries. So, for instance, here in 17, 2 years ago, I managed a campaign of a guy who challenged the machine, Ron Rivers, in the Democratic primary. And you know, if I do say so myself, we ran a very solid campaign. He was a good candidate, you know, took it seriously, you know, raised some money and worked hard going door to door in all five towns, almost every day. We got crushed 5-1, you know, and that's in the primary. So you look at it, there's only one way to look at it. It's an uphill battle, a very, very uphill battle in you know, many, if not most, of these districts here.
No, it's tough. It's tough, undoubtedly, and it'll be interesting to see. Again, who knows what turnout. We'll see what happens. It's not a presidential election year. It's not a midterm or congressional race year yet. You know, New Jersey elections are always interesting in terms of turnout. And we know that for Jack to win, like any Republican in New Jersey, again, the registration disadvantage is overwhelming too. I mean, Democrats, I think it was reported by the New Jersey Globe that I think they registered, I think, tens of thousands of new Democratic voters, while Republicans were able to register people, but not at the same pace. So right now, I think it's like 1.5 million, 1.75 million more registered Democrats than Republicans. But there's a large portion, like myself, that are independents. And, you know, 12 years ago, Chris Christie was able to beat one of the worst governors in the history of the state, John Corzine, by only 5 percentage points because, again, he needed to mobilize independents to come out and vote for him. He really needed to sort of galvanize Republicans to do that. That's how he won in 2009. Again, Murphy's not as unpopular as Corzine. But by the same token, Jack Ciarelli, and forget about what we know about Chris Christie, the 8 years of Chris Christie and all that stuff. 2009 Chris Christie, going into that election, was that sort of Republican that you needed to beat a Democrat in office. Jack isn't that guy. Again, and I like Jack. I've met him. He's been on this show. He's a gentleman. He's not that guy. And he showed that on Tuesday. And I think that's another stark disadvantage that he has, being at the top of the ballot, again, how that trickles down to Republican candidates. Coming up on the next debate, though, Charlie, if you were in the room prepping both guys, what would you tell them? This is what you should do differently in debate number two. Let's start with the governor. What would you tell him and then Ciarelli?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Governor Murphy, I would tell him to try to connect more with regular people. I think that, you know, a lot of his attitude can be you know, just elitist. I mean, maybe that's because we know that he's a you know, wealthy guy or you know, a corporate guy. But also, I think it's just kind of the way he carries himself, and you know, I think that you know, if he can speak to more of the local issues as opposed to, you know, like we mentioned, you know, kind of virtue signaling or you know, bringing up national things to try to, you know, rile people up. You know, I wish he would talk more about local issues. And you know, he obviously is working hard and, you know, in the aftermath of the storm, going to a lot of places. I would like to hear more about, you know, what he's doing here in New Jersey as opposed to kind of, you know, just those kind of buzzwords and shout-outs that he sometimes succumbs to.
What would you say to Chitterelli?
I would say he's got to get his story straight on a lot of issues. I know he appears to have come around to my position on driver's licenses for undocumented, but that's kind of a new thing. That wasn't where he was just a few weeks ago, it seems like. And then, you know, he's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth with I think, the you know, his appearance at the so-called Stop the Steal rally. You know, he's saying, oh, I didn't see any of the signs there, whatever, don't hold me accountable for being there. And, you know, at the same time, he's saying from the beginning he believes Biden was the president, when really it took him a couple of months to admit, you know, that Trump lost the election. So I think he's got to really, you know, ultimately, you know, come up with one story and stick to it. And, you know, I do think it's good for him to be, you know, calling out Murphy on taxes and some of the things he said, because, you know, Murphy has made a lot of, I would say, you know, faux pas in his interview. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's the famous one where he says the Bill of Rights is above my pay grade. You know, taxes are your issue. We're probably not your state. So I would tell him to keep holding the governor accountable for what the governor has said, but he also has to hold himself accountable and be honest about what he has said and done and you know, get his story straight.
No, great points, as always. Folks, it's 9:45 here on the East Coast. If you're just tuning in now here on Blog Talk Radio, joining me tonight is the great Charlie Cradiville, the founder and editor of New Brunswick Today. Make sure you check out this exceptional news source in Middlesex County in New Brunswick at www.newbrunswicktoday.com. Here he joins us on Politically Direct. Charlie, let's get to local stuff. Let's look at some stuff I've seen here on New Brunswick Today. Wonderful news site, a story earlier this month, which was kind of interesting. Apparently, the president of the New Brunswick Board of Ed was issued a staunch warning, apparently, since he was remaining maskless during a recent board meeting in August. Apparently, the president of the New Brunswick Board of Ed, Dale Caldwell, decided not to wear a face covering, which, again, is in violation of Executive Order 251, which was signed by Governor Murphy in response to the ongoing COVID pandemic. It's, you know, Charlie, and shout out to Joey Block, because, you know, the reason you and I have connected is because of being guests on Joey's show, and we know it's on hiatus right now since 1450 WCTC is transitioning to becoming Fox Sports Radio, so that's exciting, so I'm excited for Joey. And you know, obviously, I think we're both hoping to get back on in the middle sometime soon when that show resurfaces.
Sure.
Obviously, but you know, we've talked about this on other shows. I mean, it's become unfortunate where, you know, this is a virus that's become politicized for some time, and I think we're both intellectually honest enough to admit that both sides of the political aisle have their pet peeves about what's going on with mask mandates, about forced vaccinations, or vaccine mandates, as people want to refer to them as. We've seen, you know, in many different places of employment, whether it be in education like myself, law enforcement, medical field, this is becoming a very volatile issue. And listen, we live in a time of crazy tribalism. It's almost like tribalism on steroids. This looks like what's going on, though, Charlie, is – this is tribalism on steroids, HGH, and like a plethora of other performance-enhancing drugs, okay? It's like, think of every steroid or drug that baseball players or football players take, you know, magnify that 10 to 1,000. That's, I think, the tribalism that we're experiencing now when it comes to COVID and how to deal with it in our public schools, how to deal with it in the workplace. I mean, it's really dividing people, Trump.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
No, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, whether it's, again, the story you mentioned with the Board of Ed, the president there, we're seeing that, you know, people are fighting back to some extent. They're going to Board of Ed meetings, right? We're seeing parents.
Yeah, nobody's ever been so interested in local school boards until, you know, this summer, really.
Yeah, not just in New Jersey, but nationally, right? We've seen Board of Ed meetings in all the way out in Oregon to California to, like, Florida to the Midwest. And, I mean, it's – again, I mean, I'll remain consistent on this position. I think that what we're seeing in New Jersey is – and, you know, sort of not to beat to death about Tuesday night, but I think one of the things Jack could have really nailed the governor on is, hey, you know – if you took a regional approach to COVID as opposed to this one-size-fits-all, I think you wouldn't have pockets of the state that despise you. Because there are pockets of the state, though, Charlie, that despise the governor for this, whether it's seeing local businesses close down, how kids are now having to go to school in these circumstances. I just think it's, you know, I would argue this is not going away. And we're going to see what variants do. We're going to see what COVID, whether or not it's spiking in New Jersey. I'm reading different things. I'm reading that it's kind of like same status quo. Again, we have the winter coming up soon. It's already October 1st tomorrow. Before you know it, it's December 1st. It's going to get colder. We're going to be indoors. You know, I just think that we're still going to be fighting in 2022 about this. And I think it's tragic that it's created this climate of tribalism. Is that fair to say, Charles?
Yeah, you know, I mean, certainly COVID is an issue that a lot of people feel very deeply about, in many cases having lost friends or family from it. And then, you know, combine that with the fact that you wear the mask over your face, so it's on display for everyone to see. It's a recipe for, you know, a really, you know, a heated controversy, right? You know, we could see this coming. But, you know, there's not much we can do about it since kids still aren't eligible to be vaccinated under, you know, under age 12. And, you know, schools are, you know, can be a real vector for transmission if you got a lot of people gathering, especially once the temperature goes down and the windows are all closed and everybody's packed in. So it's a tough issue. I think, you know, in this particular story, what I wish would be that the governor would have a little courage and criticize his own ally, who is the president of the Board of Ed, who didn't wear his mask when everybody else wore their mask. And, you know, it was in violation of the governor's order. You know, the governor has kind of avoided it and not commented on it when he could have called him a knucklehead. He could have pointed out that this is not acceptable or that this is a violation and it won't be tolerated. Mm-hmm. But instead, he sidesteps the issue because it's his buddy, somebody who was on his transition team 4 years ago. And, you know, it's just you expect more from leaders, and obviously expect more from this president of the Board of Ed, who, you know, has you know, made a lot of excuses, but never just said, hey, sorry, I violated. I didn't know about the thing. But, you know, he thinks he's better than everybody, above reproach, above the law. And so, you know, he's kind of, you know, not atoned for it. I wish he would have. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, the law applies to everybody who's in a school building, whether you're the president of the Board of Ed or a visitor or you know, student or staff. So it's pretty clear. And so, yeah, we did push the issue it certainly was an interesting story. I can't say I've ever caused a prosecutor to give a stern warning to any public official, but that is now I can add that to my resume.
Yeah, no, and folks, again, if you haven't checked out the article, it's there on newbrunswicktoday.com, there on the front page. You know, another topic from Tuesday that I remember, I mean, look at my notes here, Charlie, it was a brief discussion about gun rights and about firearms in New Jersey.
Bill Carey.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, I mean, let's be honest. And again, I love New Brunswick. I love living there. When I was at Rutgers University, it's near and dear to me. You know, I'm as loud as an emphatic a Rutgers alumnus as there is, you know, and, you know, to me, New Brunswick holds a special place in my heart, but like a lot of other urban parts of the state, there are sections that have just become dangerous. Simple as that. And I'm not saying that to throw shade at New Brunswick or other urban areas, but that's just the truth. And it seems that, you know, in a state like New Jersey, again, the most densely populated state in the country, no one's saying we should be Texas. No one's saying that. But it was interesting when Chiarelli kind of threw out that line about, hey, you know, realtors or others not having access to a firearm where maybe it would benefit them. Or for New Jersey, I mean, listen, for everyone at home, I mean, applying for a firearms permit is perhaps the most difficult in the country. I mean, I can't think of a state with stricter gun laws. And I understand the need for responsible gun ownership and responsible gun laws, Charlie. But I think that, you know, in so many urban areas where residents are at a disadvantage, the police may not react as promptly or get there on time. The idea that, you know, the governor and I think a lot of Democrats in the legislature, not Democrats, I would say probably more people who identify as liberals or progressives or, you know, the idea of making it more difficult for residents to arm themselves and protect themselves, it just kind of reeks of a little hypocrisy, because these are legislators and the governor that have police protection at all hours. So they don't have to worry about their personal safety, but their constituents don't have that luxury, Charlie. So I kind of have some mixed feelings about that, where it's just like, give me a break. You know, there are residents in tons of sections of the state that are living not in the best areas. And what do you, you know, you can't carry pepper spray or a taser because it's illegal. So, you know, sometimes residents are like, well, what am I going to do to protect myself? Just lock myself in my house when I go home. It's a frustrating topic to look at from a distance, Charlie. I'm really curious about your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm generally not a supporter of having more guns around or having people conceal weapons and bring them to public places. You know, I think we have enough problems as it is. And, you know, as much as you might think that, you know, having people armed can lead to security, you know, there's, you know, just as many times, if not more, it can lead to tragedy, accident, or you know, purposeful shooting, just because people are people and we're not perfect, and you know, I think more guns tends to lead to more shooting. So generally not a supporter of that. I did think it was not a great look for Chiarelli in the debate, because he seemed to be backing off of his position a little bit. You know, Murphy said he supports concealed carry, and he says not. Oh, well, everything you just said is a lie. And then they went into it a little bit about the positions. That, you know, Murphy mentioned that, you know, he would like to give, you know, that Chiarelli would like to give concealed carry rights to realtors. And they kind of, you know, yelled at each other a little bit about that. But yeah, I don't think, you know, that's going to be a good solution. And, you know, I hope it doesn't come to pass. That said, I understand people feeling scared and, you know, wanting to protect themselves. And, you know, I think it should just be something to protect you at home and not something that you bring around town with you to the supermarket or, you know, to public places. You know, I do feel like, you know, it would lead to even worse gun violence. I think that Chiarelli is right to point out that the increase in gun murders and gun violence is a real failure of the Murphy administration, even if it may be part of a national trend. You know, they really, I don't think, have addressed it effectively. But I also don't think that Chiarelli has a good prescription for what to do about it.
No, listen, that's a fair observation as well. Listen, I'm realistic, Charlie. I think that, you know, while history's not on Governor Murphy's side, you know, a Democrat has not been reelected governor since the days of Brendan
right.
Byrne. I mean, it's a long time ago. That's before our time. So it's a long time.
Right.
But the governor seems to be in a good position. Again, registrations are in his favor. A lot of the county machines that are very powerful, from Hudson to Bergen to Middlesex
yep.
to Union, all the way down to Camden, obviously know how to mobilize and get out to vote. So it looks like short of some crazy turnout, again, independents maybe just saying, you know, listen, 4 years ago, he only beat then Lieutenant Governor Kim Godwana by 300,000 votes. And, you know, we saw over 3.5 million people stay home. Again, and it was interesting, if you remember, the Star Ledger, you know, as liberal a newspaper as that is, and as useless as the Star Ledger has been for years, they didn't even endorse anybody. So think about how uninspiring that campaign was when the Star Ledger couldn't, really endorse anybody. That's not going to be the case. The governor has an apparatus in place. He's got, a plethora of unions, everything from CWA to SEIU to, take your pick, a lot of unions, the NJEA. You know, again, that's not always reflective of its membership per se. Yeah, the leadership is one thing. The membership, who knows? It looks like the governor's in a good position to get reelected. Of course, there's always people concerned, like if he wins reelection, well, guess what? He might shut down the state again in December. He might enforce stricter mandates. Who knows? And I think that's a genuine concern by people. But, again, we'll see what happens. I would argue that if he wins on November the 2nd, again, he's in a really good chance in a position to do that. I think he will get reelected. Does this put him in a position where, you know, in the future, and again, we don't know what's going to happen in 2024. We don't know what's going to happen with Joe Biden by then. I mean, again, we don't know if he's even awake right now or even tomorrow, but, you're assuming President Biden will run again in 24. We'll see what happens, who he runs against, whether he wins. But by 2028, by then Governor Murphy's, obviously finished his second term in 2025. You know, is Murphy the kind of guy that can kind of say, hey, I won two terms as a governor in New Jersey. I know it's a blue state. Does that make him like a candidate for president in 2028? Or am I thinking too far ahead? Or does he not check off enough boxes for that?
Yeah, it's I've definitely seen a lot of speculation, especially after Tuesday, about Murphy eyeing the presidency or a run for the presidency. I know historically New Jersey's not really produced president.
Well, one guy.
Woodrow Wilson, of course. But he was really a Southerner who came here to run Princeton University and ended up through a lot of lucky breaks becoming, the president of the United States. And not exactly a good model to follow, I would say. I do think that, it would be something that Murphy, like most politicians, would love the chance to campaign for the presidency and to potentially get it. He's obviously spent a fair amount of time, building relationships outside of New Jersey, with his role at the DGA and also just, being a part of the Obama administration, having those kind of ties to corporate America and a lot of the Obama officials. He certainly, could try to make a run. Obviously, if he does not win re-election to New Jersey governor, that would probably, make it a lot harder for him. We could see a presidential race with Christie and Murphy in it one day. What a interesting, affair that would be for New Jerseyans. But I don't know. I do think it's historically New Jersey's not a very big player in the national politics, and perhaps it's because we're a special state with a lot of special stuff going on, and people would rather just leave us to our own devices instead of elevating us to higher office. But who knows? He's certainly got a lot of connections. Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting adjective. I would probably use one that's not fit for radio. It rhymes with the word luck and tuck, so I'll leave it at that. Okay. We'll see. Charlie, great points as always. Before I let you go, man, number one, I want to thank you for your time. I know you've had a busy day. You're a gentleman for being a regular here on the podcast. I really enjoy our conversations. I think that you are as astute a journalist as there is in New Jersey. And let me just say this, because I go to town on journalists a lot on my other shows, where at a statewide level, and this is the last question I wanted to run this by you. Charlie, I'm someone that is trying to just be a different type of journalist. I mean, you know, my brand of opinion journalism is my brand. You know, you are more of a meat and potatoes, roll up your sleeves, classical journalist. And that's great. I admire that. I think that's what makes New Brunswick Today such an excellent source for news and what you're doing. I would just say, and I'm going to talk about this a lot tomorrow because it's sort of like the way I think the governor's race has been covered and I think other issues. You know, I would just say that right now in New Jersey, the media landscape here, I think, is very lazy and complacent, Charlie. You know, thank goodness for guys like you. And again, you and I are going to disagree on a lot of things. You know, we're going to have very different ideas about policy prescriptions. And that's fine. We're civil. We're men. We can have decorum and talk like gentlemen. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's one of the reasons I love having you on the show. I think on the statewide level, and I really want to get your thoughts on this, you know, people like Uncle Dave, you know, David Cruz with NJTV, I mean, that's a guy who's like the poster child of complacency. I get it. He's been in the business 30 years. You know, Tom Moran with the Star-Ledger, I think, you know, he's like one of those like virtuous leftists that kind of get on my nerves. You got some people on NJ Spotlight. Hey, listen, even here, an insider NJ, and I get in trouble all the time because my colleagues get all pissy that I like to throw shade at him, but you know, whether it's like Maxi Pizarro, the editor-in-chief, or Little JJ, other columnists, it just seems like, you know, the liberal media here in New Jersey is so overwhelming that it's almost becoming to the point where it's doing us New Jerseyans, the readers, you know, the consumers of information, such a disservice. And I find people like you at the local level doing what you're doing refreshing. You know, I'm very different than what a lot of other people are doing. There aren't a lot of political podcasts in New Jersey that I think do as well. You know, I'm not saying as well as me. I'm just saying that, like, you know, they're doing well in general. I think these are sources of information, I think, that are vital. I think the big sharks in the ocean are getting lazy. They're getting a little complacent, though, Charlie. That's my view of the media landscape in New Jersey. Am I wrong here, or am I just maybe a little biased because I'm like the lone conservative out there in the ocean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much politics plays into it so much as the, you know, economic and, you know, the new media model, whatever it is. It's on the internet overwhelmingly. It's analytics driven. It's driven by numbers and getting the most content and the most clicks, and that doesn't really lend itself to the type of journalism that New Jersey needs or that, you know, our local governments need. And I think there's been a real shift away from doing local coverage, and, you know, all that's left is sort of this, you know, state coverage of big corporate players around New Jersey. And, you know, the New Brunswick Todays of the world are still, you know, toiling away at the county government meetings and the improvement authority boards and the, you know, the housing authorities, and trying to cover those issues that really do affect our readers a lot more than, you know, the state politics or the federal, you know, drama that you know we're always hearing about from Washington. So I do think that, you know, there is an element of laziness. I think it's probably more so coming from a corporate-driven agenda to force the few reporters that are working at these big outlets with big followings to, you know, feed the beast and keep producing articles every single day. And, you know, it's one of the nice things about being my own boss and you know, doing, you know, my own publication is that I don't have to meet a quota of getting a certain number of articles or a certain number of clicks, and I have the time to go on investigations and, dig deep and do things like, you know, file Open Public Records Act requests and wait weeks or months and sometimes even sue the government to force them to release records. And, you know, that's something you're just not seeing very much from the mainstream publications unless they're choosing to go all in on an issue like some have on important things like Edna Mann and other stuff like that. But unless there's a concerted effort to do the deep digging, it's just not happening. And in fact, there's little coverage at all, and it can be very easily influenced by these corporate players that have an agenda and want, you know, want the public to get a selected amount of information, but not all the information. And when you're, you know, cutting corners or you know, rushing to get as many articles as you can in a single day, it's very easy to follow the path of least resistance, you know, get the information from the PR people and republish it and not, you know, do the due diligence or consult other sources. And, you know, so much of what we see on these, you know, huge platforms that tons of people are reading is very, you know, basic level, you know, reporting that lacks the context that people need to actually put in perspective what's going on. So, you know, I think we can do better. And I think that, you know, it's not necessarily politics to blame so much as, you know, the working conditions of a lot of these reporters. And you know, I'm talking about the ones who toil away every single day and do, you know, the reporting more so than, you know, the columnists or other, you know, figureheads that you know, you might be talking about. There's a lot of journalists that are in those difficult situations, and I hope that you know, they can improve their working conditions and focus more on the stuff that their readers are really going to want instead of, you know, the 10 best places to get nachos.
that's, you know what, I think a lot of these sites are guilty of that, whether it's the Star Ledger or NorthJersey.com or maybe Down by You, other sites. You know, these are just things that, I don't know, sometimes it just kind of makes you scratch your head. Charles, before I let you go again, I want to thank you for your time. I haven't done this in a while, and I want to make sure I resume this on the show. But, you know, I've been the one asking questions here. I've been the one, you know, trying to have a good dialogue with you. I love having you on the show, man. I think you're a wealth of information. Certainly, you do a great job with me, brother, today. But, you know, I'm going to give you the floor, man. Like, you know, you got a question for me or you want to pick my brain on something, sir, the floor is yours. I've been asking questions. Now it's your turn.
Okay. Well, I like this. I mean, I guess the one thing I would want to hear from you on is your thoughts on the 2020 election, you know, some people call it a coup, insurrection, January 6th riot at the Capitol. I'm curious what your, you know, take is on all that and, you know, what you think, you know, the future holds for the MAGA maniacs, as you call them.
Well, that's a loaded one. Let me break it down. I think that, listen, we saw it during the gubernatorial primary on the Republican side of New Jersey. I think that there's still a portion of the state that are still MAGA maniacs. You know, let's hope, you know, whatever God people pray to, let's hope a Hersing never runs for anything again, not even for dog catcher, okay? I mean, this is a guy who has just wasted money for years on campaigns and doesn't get any traction. You know, Phil Rizzo's a guy who I got to meet. You know, he's an interesting story about a lot of the adversity he faced. But, I mean, these are guys that really, I think, resonated with, I think, the Trump model of politics. And, you know, that doesn't rub every conservative the right way. So again, I think that's something that will disappear slowly but surely in Republican circles in New Jersey. Listen, I've been consistent about this. I'll be talking about it tomorrow. And, you know, what happened on January 6th, first and foremost, was unacceptable. That's not how you behave. You don't do that. You don't run into the Capitol building, cause destruction of property, cause harm to law enforcement. You don't do that, you know. And listen, if people are going to get prosecuted, they're going to get prosecuted, you know. I would not have gone there and engaged in violence. That's not the right way to get your message across. But, Charlie, you know, the problem is that for conservatives like me, you know, we're seeing the liberal media, you know, the usual suspects, the CNNs of the world, the New York Times, MSNBC, The Post, the LA Times, you know, up in arms and being sanctimonious about, you know, what these people meant or what it was or that they were doing and, you know, how it's portrayed. But, I mean, let's be honest. Listen, case in point, you know, I live right across Manhattan, Charlie. And, you know, all last summer when BLM protesters and Antifa, more BLM protesters, were destroying police cars, were destroying public and private property, you know, I haven't seen one prosecution yet. The DA in New York City said emphatically, and this is not me concocting this. This is folks at home, you can Google this. This is not me making this up. Okay, the DA in New York City said very simply, we're not going to prosecute anybody. And that just sent a bad message to me where it's like, wait a minute, you want me to be outraged about January 6th when last summer we saw BLM protesters burned cities to the ground all across the country, and not one, like, again, then you saw the liberal media nationally just sort of, well, you know, these are people that are disenfranchised, or these are people acting out because of injustice. One thing is injustice, Charlie. One thing is, you know, enabling this by not holding people accountable. So I think a lot of conservatives are sort of waiting for the, you know, and I'm not trying to draw a moral equivalence here. What I'm trying to do is, hey, you want me to be upset about the six? I can be upset about the six, but do me a favor. For people on the other side, not everybody, you're a reasonable guy. You're rational. You're logical. There's a lot on the other side that are going to say, well, that's not the case. Well, you want me to be outraged? Then you need to be outraged about what happened or lack thereof. Because again, look across the river here in New York City. Not one prosecution's happened since last summer. We all saw the images, Charlie. We all saw the images in Philadelphia. We all saw the images in Cleveland, St. Louis, Detroit, whatever, Minneapolis. Not one prosecution. We saw buildings burned to the ground. We saw people throw stuff at police cars. And nothing, not even so much as a prosecution. I think that's where a lot of conservatives get their blood boiling when it comes to maybe a lack of consistency in reporting. Having said that, hey, Joe Biden won the presidency. Again, I think that, you know, when I went to bed on Tuesday night, election day, I said, oh, wow, look at these states. Okay, wow, okay. And I felt pretty good. Woke up Wednesday morning and seeing like this dramatic shift in voter turnout and all that. I mean, listen, you know, Joe Biden's the president, you know. I think that there are a lot of people that I know personally that have a lot of buyer's remorse based on what we're seeing, whether it's inflation, whether it's the fact that, you know, what's going on in Washington, a lack of any coherence legislatively, you know, it's, you know, Joe Biden's in, I think, for a really rude awakening next year in the midterms. I think it's not just Republicans winning the House. They're going to take back the Senate. And I think Joe Biden's next 2 years in office are going to be a nightmare. Nothing might get done. That's a shame because you don't want that sort of, like, you know, impasse. Gridlock. You want government to work. You want government to work, you know. You want it to work. And again, I think that, you know, we're seeing the crisis at the border. We're seeing that, you know, I mean, we're seeing a mass migration, you know, here in, you know, New Jersey or around the country. We're talking about vaccine requirements for people. But are we vetting people at the border? Are we going to require these people to get vaccinated? I mean, this is where conservatives like me get our red meat. This is where we're like, oh, let's roll up the sleeves. We're kind of licking our chops here. Like, It's like I'm getting an extra scoop of ice cream, Charlie, you know, when we see these things. I just think it's a lot to unpackage. But, again, I hope I answered your question because there's a few layers there that you mentioned.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your forthrightness, and of course, thank you for the opportunity to speak to your audience, and always a pleasure speaking with you,
bro. God bless you, man. You do good work, folks. Again, he is Charlie Cradaville, the founder and editor of New Brunswick Today. Check him out, www.newbrunswicktoday.com. An exceptional news source in Middlesex County, holding those accountable in New Brunswick, as we all know, the machine politics there in New Brunswick and Middlesex County is overwhelming, like a tsunami. And but you know what? A guy like Charlie Cradaville, he's trying to hold those in power accountable, and you got to respect guys like that, because you know what? He's not doing it because he needs, you know, he's not doing it for blanks and giggles, as Austin Powers would say. He's doing it because he cares. So good job by Charlie Cradaville. Charlie, God bless you, brother. I'll talk to you next month here on Politically Direct, and stay healthy out there and keep up the good work, brother.
Thanks. You too, Fernando.
All right, brother. Take care. Folks, good interview today here, 10:18 on the East Coast here on Block Talk Radio. Again, Charlie Cradaville, an amazing journalist. You know, if you ever check out New Brunswick Today, I mean, it's a great news source for those living in Middlesex County in that area. You know, you definitely want to check it out. Again, www.newbrunswicktoday.com. Folks, it's our show for this week here, again, as we wrap up the month of September. And, you know, again, if you're just joining us here, you can check out tonight's episode in its entirety in just a few moments. You can also check out previous episodes as well at www.insidernj.com/podcasts, and make sure you do that. And do me a favor, folks, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Also, write to me on Twitter, again, @NoFilterUribe. That's @NoFilterUribe. And also, check me up on Instagram, folks, @ProfessorFernandoUribe, again, URIBE. And, of course, if you're a Facebook subscriber, go there and make sure you like Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe. share it on your walls, and make sure to tell your friends to do the same. Folks, again, all episodes of Politically Direct are available via www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You can download the episodes from anywhere, anytime, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Folks, again, this show is brought to you by Insider NJ, the leader in political news here in the Garden State. Folks, go to www.insidernj.com for the best news source there is in New Jersey politics, covering this election season like nobody else in the state. Again, you can always depend on insidernj.com. Again, great columnists. A special thank you to the Graham family, Ryan Graham and Michael Graham specifically, for their support of the podcast, as well as my insider GM, Peter Nelia, for his support of the podcast. And, of course, partnering with me since January of 2018. Shout out to them for their support here. And, of course, their belief in my abilities, which means a lot. So I appreciate their support. And, folks, I appreciate your support as well. Every week, the traffic looks great. Again, check out all the episodes, www.insidernj.com/podcasts. Again, that's S with a plural, podcast. And share it on your social media. Tell your friends, again, about what I would argue the best podcast covering New Jersey politics. Folks, you can always depend right here on this show here via Insider NJ. And again, folks, www.insidernj.com. Make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. Remember to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Once again, folks, that's our show for this week here. Again, wrapping up the month of September. Got some great guests coming up in the month of October, my favorite month. We'll continue covering politics again, 32 days and counting until Election Day. A lot to unpackage here in these coming weeks with candidates, other journalists I'll be talking to. And again, folks, if it's unbiased, unfiltered, and unafraid, you know it's always the four-time award-winning Politically Direct. Folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And as always, let's keep on talking.